Welcome to As a Woman, Fertility Hormones and Beyond. I'm your host, Dr. Natalie Crawford, and I am a board-certified OBGYN and fertility physician, and also co-founder of Fora Fertility in Austin, Texas. Each week on this podcast, I discuss health and fertility and how they relate to your true self. Become a part of the community of collaboration that amplifies others as a woman. I hope you enjoy the episode. Hello, and welcome back to the As a Woman podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Natalie Crawford, and today we are talking all about understanding your body. Recently, I was a guest on a podcast, and I was asked the question, what is one thing you wish people understood about their body? And the truth is, what I want you to understand is that it is essential, critical, important that you do understand how your body works, your hormones, your reproductive system, especially in today's world. When we talk about bodily autonomy and being able to make your own medical decisions, education and understanding is step number one. And especially here in the US, in an uncertain political climate, knowing how your period works, how do you ovulate? How do you prevent pregnancy? How do you get pregnant? What are warning signs that something is wrong with your overall health or your reproductive health? Those things are really essential for you to make the decisions that are important in your life, no matter what they are, regardless of what your goals are. And that's been my entire mission the entire time that I have been on social media in one way or another. So what I want you to know is what we're going to go over today, some very basic building blocks. What is a period? What are those crucial elements of how your body's working? Because once we start to understand that, we will then begin to understand how all of these factors play together and how the hormones, the reproductive system, the brain, the ovaries, the uterus, how they really interact with the rest of our life. One thing before we get started is that I would love for you guys to sign up for the newsletter on nataliecrawfordmd.com/newsletter. We talk about fertility in the news, which lately there's been just too much of, but also answer some of your fertility questions. I share some of my favorite recipes and just overall updates. There are so many exciting things in the works, and I cannot wait to share them with you, but go and learn more. Also, what I want you to know is that we answer questions on this podcast every single week. You can ask these questions on Instagram at NatalieCrawfordMD. Some will be answered here on the podcast. Some will be answered right there on Instagram. And some will be answered in that newsletter. So every Monday, you'll see a question box. And please, I love answering your questions. Sometimes entire episodes are just based on one single question that you ask. Those questions that we do answer will be answered at the end in a For Fertility's Sake segment, and you'll be able to hear those at the end of every episode. We also love to answer your questions when you call and leave voicemails. These are some of my absolute favorite episodes to answer because sometimes you don't even know what questions you have until you listen to everyone else's. You can call the voicemail number at 657-229-3672. Again, that is 657-229-3672. Leave a voicemail. You can leave your name, but you also do not have to. And I would love to answer that question for you. So jumping into today's episode, understanding your body. When it comes to thinking about how your body works, it's really important to start at the beginning. So this will be a concise episode, but at the same point, you've got to start where it starts. And so what's very interesting is that when you are a baby inside your mother's womb, you actually have the most eggs that you're ever going to have. And if you've heard me talk before, you know that I actually like to start this discussion with the ovary and not the brain. Every single month, you lose a group of eggs. And this starts before you're even born. In fact, you lose more eggs when you have more remaining. So you lose more eggs from 20 weeks gestation to birth. You lose half your eggs in that time period. The rest of your life, you're already down half by the moment you're born. Isn't that crazy? And so many factors can influence how many eggs you have. We call this your ovarian reserve, the number of eggs you have. And the reason why this number is very different person to person is honestly because likely of the things that your mom was exposed to for her own health when she was gestating you, since that is when many of these eggs are lost. Now, it's normal to lose eggs. You should not be born with too many eggs. It can cause problems as well, because you really need a good balance of eggs to have normal brain and ovary communication. What happens is that every single month, you have a group of eggs released from the vault inside the ovary. There's no actual vault, although I like this idea because it makes conceptual sense. If you've got a vault of eggs, every month you have a group of eggs that is coming out of the vault. Each egg grows inside a follicle. That's important because a follicle is a small fluid-filled structure that we can see, and an egg is microscopic, and you can't see it without a microscope. Your body has this entire group of follicles, and all of those years, from when you're born until when you start your first period, these eggs just die. They come out of the vault, they die. Why do they die? They die because they are not stimulated to grow. The food for the eggs, or the stimulus to get an egg to grow, is FSH, follicle stimulating hormone. Follicle stimulating hormone is released from the pituitary gland, and this is, for lack of a better word, the food for the eggs. So FSH is being sent out, and it is going to start an egg growing. And when that egg starts to grow, then it will make estrogen. What is so interesting is that when you first start puberty, if you think back, your body started making estrogen for approximately 2 years before it ever became high enough to make your body actually ovulate. And that's because the brain and the ovary, they don't know exactly what's happening, meaning the brain's starting to send out this FSH and it cannot see what the ovary is doing. It can just listen. And what it's listening for, its signal back, is actually estrogen. Meaning as an egg starts to grow, it will make estrogen. That estrogen in those first few years of puberty, before you have a period, are causing what we call your secondary sex characteristics. They start breast development. You'll have some androgens made too. It'll cause sexual hair. So pubic hair and axillary hair. And estrogen only, unopposed estrogen, meaning estrogen in the presence of no progesterone, because you do not have progesterone until you start ovulating. And this is actually very, very important in breast development. Breast tissue grows differently when it's exposed to different hormones. And so if somebody walks in the door and has no breast development, one, if you're 16 and older, that should definitely warrant an evaluation. And two, what we should not do is start that person on like a combined birth control pill. A combined birth control pill with estrogen and progesterone will cause a very specific breast abnormality called tubular breast. And that's because breast tissue needs 2 years of estrogen exposure alone. And then you start having progesterone once you start ovulating. So as your HPO axis is maturing, this is the hypothalamic pituitary ovary axis. We start to have the secondary sex characteristics of early puberty. And then once the entire axis is mature and gets into sync, we will actually start to see ovulation. So the brain actually has two different parts that control part of this whole hormonal axis for you. We have the hypothalamus, which I like to think of as the control center. It is interpreting signals from the rest of your body and then sending out a code to the pituitary gland to send out more, less, or no hormones. Think of the pituitary gland as a storage center for hormones. It's actually so interesting. If you map out the pituitary gland, different areas of it make different types of hormones. You have specific cells that make specific types of hormones. To me, that is just so fascinating. And when one cell type becomes overactive, it can interfere with the production of a next door cell type. So this system is so complex. The hypothalamus sends out a hormone called GnRH, or gonadotropin releasing hormone, which then controls the release of FSH and LH. And these are lovely known as our gonadotropins because they work on our gonads, or in women, our ovaries. Interestingly, the same hormones work in men. They're just actually named for what they do in the female body, which I love because that is so rare in medicine. FSH in women is what gets a follicle to grow. It gets that egg maturing and makes estrogen. When your body sees a high enough estrogen level for enough time, 200 picograms of estrogen for 50 hours or more, then it will release LH or luteinizing hormone. LH is then released in a huge surge. So this constant high estrogen is the ovary's way of telling the hypothalamus, we have a mature egg. And then the hypothalamus will see that and say, yes, let's ovulate, and tells the pituitary gland to send out a surge of LH. This LH surge causes the follicle, which grew the egg. Remember, the follicle is a fluid-filled structure. The egg is microscopic. As the egg matured, the follicle got bigger, which is amazing and fascinating and really is so important in what we're able to do in reproductive medicine, because we can see that on ultrasound. That follicle grew and got to a point when LH triggered it with that LH surge, that follicle ruptured. So if you've ever heard a friend say she had a cyst rupture, totally normal. Cysts rupture every single month when you ovulate, if you're having ovulatory cycles. That's why when it comes to ovarian cysts, very often people will say, oh, you should take birth control to prevent this cyst, because if you don't ovulate, you will not have a normal functioning cyst. In fact, if I go and do an ultrasound or a CAT scan on somebody, 3 out of the 4 weeks of their cycle, I will see a cyst on their ovary, and it is very, very normal. And honestly, it's even more days than that. Because after you ovulate, the follicle releases, all the follicular fluid comes out. You might feel that pain. Some people are very sensitive or very in tune with their body, and they can feel that ovulatory pain. It's called Mittelschmerz, which is German for in the middle, because you ovulate in the middle of your cycle. And now a word from one of our sponsors, Ritual. Did you know that women were excluded from clinical research policy by federal law until 1993? But women belong in scientific research. They're essential, and Ritual knows this. I choose Ritual multivitamin every day because it is easy to take, and I know that I am getting high quality and traceable ingredients in a clean and bioavailable forms. In fact, Ritual conducted a university-led human clinical trial for their Essential for Women 18 Plus multivitamin to assess its efficacy, and the results showed increase in vitamin D levels by 43% and omega-3 DHA levels by 41% in just 12 weeks. No lying, shady business. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus is a multivitamin that you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month at ritual.com/AAW. Start Ritual or add Essential for Women 18 Plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/AAW for 25% off. Thank you, Ritual. And now a word from one of our sponsors, Quince. The weather's getting warmer, so it's time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and hello to shorts and tees. I wanted to update my wardrobe for the long haul without spending a fortune, and luckily I found Quince. Now I've got a lineup of timeless pieces that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year. The best part is that Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands, but Quince partners directly with top factories, cutting out the cost of the middleman, passing the saving to us, and only working with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices. I personally cannot wait to wear my cute tan linen set this summer. So it's your turn to get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/AAW for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/AAW to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/AAW. Thank you, Quince. After you ovulate, that follicle then reforms. It seals back up and it completely changes its architecture. And now it becomes very fatty and it becomes a progesterone-making factory. So it went from making estrogen in the follicular phase of the cycle. So that time period where you went from, I'm on my period, I have a group of eggs sent out of the vault, And now I have a follicle growing. My brain is sending out FSH. I am making estrogen. I have no progesterone. I am estrogen dominant. This is the follicular phase. Now I have ovulated. That follicle now becomes a corpus luteum, which can make progesterone and estrogen. And it loves making progesterone. The progesterone that it makes is so essential to pregnancy. Progesterone opens and closes the implantation window. It prepares the uterus for the ability to allow an embryo to implant. Progesterone is made in pulses. I would probably scream it from the rooftop if I could, because so many different tests, companies, people try to tell you that a one-time check of a progesterone is diagnostic of having too little progesterone. The reality is that corpus luteum makes progesterone in response to LH pulses from the brain. And progesterone will be anywhere from 3 to 40 nanograms anytime in the luteal phase. So you're going to see it rise and fall and rise and fall. And that's why a single progesterone level is only diagnostic of ovulation, and it only has to be 3 or above. A progesterone level is not telling you anything about the quality of the luteal phase. It does not diagnose a luteal phase defect, which I believe is a real thing. A luteal phase issue is an ovulatory issue, and that's a clinical diagnosis by thinking about clinical symptoms. That corpus luteum can only last for about 2 weeks. And so 12 to 14 days is the average. That is why the luteal phase is more set, no matter what your period is. Meaning, if your cycles are 28 days apart, the luteal phase, the second half of the cycle after you've ovulated, is approximately 14 days. So you can figure out when you ovulate by taking 28 minus 14, and you would ovulate around cycle day 14. If you have a period that is 35 days apart, the luteal phase is still 14 days. So you would take 35 minus 14 and you ovulate on cycle day 21. So you can see if you have a longer cycle and you are just targeting having intercourse around cycle days 10 to 15, which some family planning apps might tell you to do, you are totally missing your fertile window. Your fertile window is calculated based on the time period when you ovulate. Interestingly, sperm can live in the body for up to 5 days. An egg only lives for 24 hours. So we generally think of the 5 days before and the day of ovulation being those top days, being what we consider the fertile window. So if you are trying to prevent pregnancy, you'd want to avoid anything during that time frame. And if you want to try to get pregnant, you're going to optimize intercourse in that time period. So knowing when you ovulate can help you on both ends, either get pregnant or avoid pregnancy. When it comes to ovulating, after you ovulate, that corpus luteum is making that progesterone. This is again the luteal phase, and this is the time period when your body is preparing to potentially get pregnant. Progesterone is the progestational hormone. It is preparing you for a pregnancy. By definition, that is what this hormone does. Therefore, you will be more tired, fatigued, bloated, breast tenderness, potentially nauseous or hungry or food sensitive, and have less energy. Your body is trying to get you to slow down and be ready to support a pregnancy. The follicular phase on the other end, so that time period when your body knows it is not pregnant. There's a 0% chance you're pregnant. You have not ovulated. The follicular phase is the time when your body is like, yes, yes, this is about me. This is my time. My estrogen is high. Female body loves estrogen. Do not let anybody ever tell you different. You're going to be your sharpest, be able to concentrate, get things off your to-do list, have a lot of energy. As that estrogen starts to peak, your sex drive should go up. The lubrication, your cervical mucus is going to increase. You are naturally going to feel more inclined to have intercourse when you're ovulating. So this is such a fascinating system. And when people talk about cycle syncing, this is what they're referencing. purposefully doing tasks in different times of the cycle, whether it's high intensity versus low intensity exercise, eating different types of food. But honestly, it's just paying attention to your body, listening to the hormonal signals that it is giving you. Progesterone compacts the uterine lining. So estrogen grows that uterine lining and progesterone compacts it. When you are not pregnant, progesterone drops because the corpus luteum can only live for those 2 weeks. It dies. Progesterone drops. And that drop in progesterone is the signal to have a period. Nothing else. The drop in progesterone is the signal to have a period. This is very important because that drop is not coming from the brain. There's no brain signal involved. It's an ovarian function. If you have periods, you are ovulating. So right away from somebody's history, I can understand if they are ovulating or if they are not based on capturing this good medical history. So when it comes to understanding the body, regular cyclic periods, meaning you have your period come at a regular and predictable interval, is telling you immediately that your brain and your ovaries are in communication. And that is really important because the variants that we see from this are starting to tell us that our brain and ovaries are not communicating well. And that can be indication of disease or inflammation or ultimately being not healthy. An important distinction is that when you get pregnant, the pregnancy comes in and it starts to make HCG. Now, you should be familiar with HCG because that's the common pregnancy hormone. And when you take a pregnancy test, that's what we're checking. HCG is so interesting, but HCG and LH or luteinizing hormone, they share a receptor. So HCG can stimulate that corpus luteum to keep making progesterone. And this is very different. So LH came from the brain and pulses. Progesterone goes up and down and up and down until an embryo implants, of which suddenly your body now has a constant and increasing stimulus for progesterone. So now that corpus luteum does need to be churning out a lot of progesterone. And we do have levels of progesterone that can indicate a good pregnancy or a higher odds of a normal pregnancy based on pregnancy data. And what people have done is they have taken pregnancy data and they've applied it to the luteal phase. And that's where things go wrong because the luteal phase is not a pregnancy. We hope it turns into one if you're trying to get pregnant, but understanding how the body is working in these two time periods is very important because people have taken this and they've run with it. They've applied it to labs that you get drawn in any time. And you will hear people talking about estrogen dominance and progesterone deficiency from a random lab draw on any day of your cycle. And first of all, it's just not true. Your body is meant to be estrogen dominant and progesterone deficient half your life. If you are a cycling person, then those months, you're meant to not have those hormones. You are only supposed to have progesterone being made in that luteal phase. And there is no magic ratio of estrogen, and there's no magic ratio of estrogen to progesterone in the luteal phase because progesterone is constantly changing. It's also important to understand, just based on semantics, you ovulate at that 2 week mark. That egg has to be fertilized within 24 hours. This pregnancy is cooking. It implants about a week later. So that's when implantation begins. The soonest that HCG is typically in your body and able to take a pregnancy test is now typically around 8 to 9 days after ovulation at the very earliest. When you've missed your period, that is about 2 weeks from when you ovulated. Now, because of common pregnancy nomenclature, meaning people have been pregnant for all of time, well before we understood this entire system of the body, we count back to when you had your last period when people date pregnancies. So the moment you've missed your period, if you have perfect 28-day cycles and you take a pregnancy test and it is positive, you are now magically 4 weeks pregnant, even though you only ovulated 2 weeks ago. So that embryo is less than 2 weeks along in its lifespan, but you are called 4 weeks pregnant. And so we've kept pregnancy dating the same simply because that's what we had in literature for so long. But understanding that difference helps explain some questions that people have when it comes to pregnancy dating. When we do IVF and we go put embryos in, we take an embryo to the implantation stage, which is the blastocyst stage, day 5 or 6 embryo. The day you get eggs out is day 0, the day of ovulation. They're fertilized the next day, grow out to day 5 or 6. And so when I put an embryo in somebody, you're magically 2 weeks, 5 days pregnant, even though the embryo is only 5 days old. So interesting. All right, we are going to dive in to a few of the variants of this and how that can impact a disease quickly, and then I'll answer some of your questions. So importantly, when we say that your period is a vital sign and that your hormones are a reflection of your overall health, that's a true statement. And the reason why is that your body is interpreting, your brain is interpreting the signals from your ovary and your whole body in order to determine if this is a time where you can support a pregnancy, and if so, to let you ovulate. And there's a lot of different reasons why these signals get interrupted. And one of them are factors that are not from your ovary, but from your body, your chronic stress or illness. So really understanding your period and tracking your period can be such an insightful thing to know about how your body is working. If you're on hormonal contraception, whether it's estrogen, progesterone, or combined, you no longer have that period as a vital sign. That doesn't mean the hormones are bad. That doesn't mean that it's interfering in some negative way. But it means at that moment, we're no longer getting that data. So in order to get the data, we're going to have to stop that form of contraception if we're trying to get pregnant. And that's why, depending on what you may be utilizing, there are different recommendations for when you might want to stop it in order to get your period pattern back and be able to understand if there could be a problem or not. And that is just a very key component, because similarly, you can't accurately draw some of these blood values when you're on contraception. Just like you can't just check hormones on any old random day and draw big conclusions, because set times of the cyclic pattern, when you are on your period, when you are growing an egg, when you are ovulating, when you have just ovulated, when you're in the middle of the luteal phase, when you're about to get your period, when you are early pregnant, your hormones should be different things all of those days. The other thing to know is that people do go into ovarian failure, premature menopause early. And I am going to say this because it ties into contraception in general. Hormone replacement is not bad. In fact, it is very good. People who go through menopause early specifically, your body is not meant to be without estrogen for that long, and you have increased risk of many things, whether it be dementia, Alzheimer's disease, heart disease, stroke, osteoporosis. Overall, you're going to have a decreased quality of life without that estrogen. And so we want to see that estrogen replacement, whether that is estrogen low from hypothalamic amenorrhea, premature ovarian failure, or just going through normal menopause. You don't know where you fall on this unless you understand your body. And now a word from one of our sponsors, Apostrophe. With the temperatures starting to warm up, I'm so excited that summer is around the corner and getting ready and looking forward to the summer months. But I know that when I'm outside enjoying nature, I need to pick up supplies to prepare myself for summer adventures. And if you want to get your skin glowing in time for summer, it's time for you to get started with Apostrophe, who is sponsoring this episode. Apostrophe's goal is to help you feel confident in your own skin. So whether you're dealing with breakouts, signs of aging, or acne scarring, Apostrophe will help you love the skin you're in. I personally love that you get access to an expert dermatology team, a tailored treatment plan. It's simple to sign up for your first visit, and there is no in-person appointment or trip to the pharmacy needed. We have a special deal for our audience. Get your first visit for only $5 at apostrophe.com/AAW when you use our code AAW. That's a savings of $15. This code is only available to our listeners. To get started, just go to apostrophe.com aaw.com/AAW and click get started. Then use the code AAW at sign up and you'll get your first visit for only $5. Thank you, Apostrophe, for sponsoring this episode. When it comes to ovulation, I view ovulatory disorders as a spectrum. So we have perfect regular cyclic periods, and that is when within 1 to 2 days of accuracy, you can say, here's my period. Then we have shortened cycles is typically the next phase. This is actually the world of a luteal phase defect very often. And that means you're ovulating, but then that luteal phase, the time period from ovulation until that next period is either shortened or you have spotting. And this is typically that first sign of some ovulatory dysfunction. We also can start to see then lengthening of your cycles. So now instead of having those cycles that may be what you expect, you start to see those longer cycles. And in those cycles, as we said before, you are ovulating later. For some reason, it's now taking longer, stronger signal of FSH to get you to ovulate. And then you have full-on amenorrhea. Amenorrhea is the absence of periods. This might be a circumstance when it is happening before you ever have a period. That's called primary amenorrhea. Has its own series of an evaluation that should be done. And then you have secondary amenorrhea, which is much more common, which is when you previously have had at least one period, but now you no longer do. And the workup for these things are different. When it also comes to running out of eggs or getting into that time period where you start to have fewer eggs, you also start to see ovulatory dysfunction. And this is an interesting concept because we will tell you, if we are going to evaluate how many eggs that you have, what we're going to do is evaluate the follicles, the eggs that are outside the vault. We can count them on ultrasound, which is called an antral follicle count. And we can do a blood test called AMH, which stands for anti-Müllerian hormone. I'm a huge proponent for checking your ovarian reserve, which is these two values, if you want to have children one day in the future. Because you do not know what you do not know. And you might make decisions based on that data. And transparency, that actually goes against ACOG recommendations. But the reason why is that I have sat across from too many people who said, if only I'd had this information, I would have done something different. I would have frozen my eggs. I would have started trying to get pregnant sooner. You don't get the opportunity unless you know. Similarly, because when you start to run out of eggs, you have fewer eggs being released from the vault. What you start to see is it doesn't take. Similarly, when you have fewer eggs, you do actually start to see some ovulatory changes. And what we'll tell you and what studies show is that, oh, your ovarian reserve does not impact your fecundability or your probability of getting pregnant per month. And that makes sense because your fecundability is about your chances per your age. So your body shouldn't care if you have 5 eggs outside the vault or 25. If you're ovulating 1, you have the same age-related chance as long as you're regularly ovulating. However, you definitely have less time if your egg count is low, but at some point you are going to have some ovulatory dysfunction. We see that as the ovary starts to have less eggs, it becomes a little bit more stubborn. That FSH signal has to work harder from the brain to get an egg to grow. And then an egg responds faster and you start to ovulate and have a shorter follicular phase. So the ovulatory changes we see as we age are a little bit different. First, it is earlier ovulation. Somebody who tells me my cycles used to be 28 to 30 days and now they are 23 to 24, I have a red flag. My brain thinks you have low ovarian reserve until I've proven otherwise. That to me, a clear change in ovulatory pattern is you're running out of eggs unless I've proven it otherwise. And that's usually pretty advanced diminishing reserve, meaning that doesn't happen if you're just a little bit low. You really have to be in the bottom of that egg count to see that change. Then the ovaries are going to get more stubborn and just not even respond to some of that FSH. So you'll start to see the spacing out of the periods, and this is what we classically think of as perimenopause, because you're going through chunks of time when you're not making estrogen. And then you have that period, or the lack of that period. You have the moment in time where you no longer have periods and you get into amenorrhea from being out of eggs, and this is what we call menopause. really you have postmenopause, which is after menopause. Menopause is, hey, now I haven't had periods for a year. What we find is that in this time frame, your FSH is so high because your brain wants estrogen so bad, it is sending out everything it has, and your ovary has nothing to give it. There are no eggs to grow, no estrogen to be made. And that is why when you are at this perimenopause stage even, and you start to get this very high FSH, because your body's like, please, please, please grow an egg. And there's really not any eggs responding, even though you still have some, you start to have this irregular pattern. I can't come in with IVF and get the eggs to grow, because what is IVF? IVF or egg freezing is taking 1 month's group of eggs, giving you FSH at high doses and getting them all to grow. And if your ovaries are already seeing high levels of FSH and not responding, coming in and giving you high levels of FSH is not going to get the job done. That's why once you've crossed that threshold and your FSH is really high, we're at the point where fertility interventions are not going to get the job done. Doesn't mean you might never get pregnant, although the odds are low, but you might still randomly ovulate because you're not 100% out. You're just past the point of being responsive. What we also see is that in that amenorrhea zone, you could also have something called hypothalamic amenorrhea. And this is when your brain is no longer sending out FSH. So the brain has decided this is not a good time to be pregnant. You are going to have the exact same low estrogen symptoms. Fatigue, brain fog, you're going to have less energy, you might gain weight, you're going to have no sex drive, you're going to have vaginal dryness, you might feel like you're very irritable, you might have hot flashes. The etiology is different, the side effects are the same because it's all stemming from that low estrogen. But in hypothalamic, what's happening is suddenly you're at a place where your brain says, the signals I'm getting do not support ovulation. And so this might be extreme exercise. This might be caloric restriction, extreme weight loss, chronic illness, inflammation, autoimmune disease, a variety of things, head trauma, brain injury, brain tumors. So you have this pattern of things that can contribute to your brain being like, I'm not going to send out FSH now. Can some of these things be recovered? Yes. But anorexia is an example that we've got a lot of good data on telling us that caloric improvement after the recovery of that eating disorder, you must now be at this stable place for years, plural, before your brain decides it's ready to kick back on and make FSH. So the recovery from hypothalamic amenorrhea can be very difficult. I also see what I like to call hypothalamic dysfunction. And this is probably where a lot of people with some irregularity in their cycles live, especially if it's not PCOS or a few of the other causes I'm about to go over. In hypothalamic dysfunction, something is interfering with the brain's interpretation of the estrogen. And it's probably inflammation, autoimmunity, or chronic stress. Because y'all, your brain knows when you're stressed. And so it is blunting the signal of GnRH to get FSH to send out and LH. So it's just not sending out quite enough at quite the right time because it has this interference. And that is why, not just from an egg quality standpoint or a healthy pregnancy standpoint, improving your lifestyle and the choices you make, taking care of your health holy can make a huge difference in ultimately your body and your health. From there, we have some other, we'll call them brain issues because they stem from the pituitary gland. So this is going to be mostly prolactin production. Prolactin is one of the hormones made from the pituitary gland. This can actually be from certain medications, from breastfeeding, nipple stimulation, but most notably is from a small tumor, non-cancerous tumor in the pituitary gland called a prolactinoma. It starts making so much prolactin that the cells next door, the gonadotrope, don't want to send out FSH and LH, and you go through those exact stages of ovulatory dysfunction. Short luteal phase, irregular cycle, skipping months, no period at all as your prolactin levels rise. As you treat them and they go back down, your periods go back normal. Thyroid disease is another one because TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone, is made from the pituitary, which stimulates the thyroid gland to then make the wonderfully named thyroid hormone. So if you're not seeing enough thyroid hormone, you have hypothyroidism, your brain, your pituitary gland, going to be pumping out some TSH to try to get more thyroid hormone made. That's going to take energy and resources from the pituitary away from sending out those gonadotropins again. So we have these different issues. They all relate to the brain not wanting to send out or not being able to send out FSH and LH. And you have your ovary being totally not responsive in the ovarian failure because it's out of eggs. And then you also have PCOS. And PCOS is common, called polycystic ovarian syndrome. At least 1 out of 10 women have it. And my simplest way to think about PCOS is having a lot of eggs. So suddenly now you have a lot of eggs. Your vault is going to adjust for this by sending more eggs out every month. Your brain doesn't know that this is happening, sends out its normal amount of FSH, but that signal is not strong enough to get one follicle to grow to maturity on a regular, predictable basis. Because the ovary, when it still functions, different than when it gets no signal or an ovarian failure. In PCOS, the ovary and the brain are in communication. There's just a disconnect between the FSH to the follicle ratio. So now your ovary gets really bored. LH starts stimulating some of those cells to make testosterone. And the ovary loves to make hormones. It's a hormone-making factory, chugs out some testosterone. And that makes the whole pattern worse. Because now suddenly you're going to get acne, increased hair growth. You're going to develop insulin resistance, which is going to also increase your weight. Fat cells make estrogen. Estrogen tells the brain, we're already growing a follicle, but you're not growing a follicle. That estrogen is coming from a different source. So the brain's going to send out even less FSH. You're not keeping those eggs any longer because, again, every single month the eggs are going to die or ovulate. So you lose the group and another one comes out. And maybe some months in PCOS, it's lower. And this month you actually bleed. Some months you're still stimulating the lining to grow because each little follicle, when they don't grow, makes a little bit of estrogen. Just enough, again, to keep the brain from sending out a strong enough FSH signal. And so what happens is that there is just this miscommunication. But the next month, if there's a lower group, maybe the signal's better. All of that little estrogen, though, grows the lining and does put people with PCOS who do not have regular periods at risk for endometrial cancer. That's not the case from hypothalamic disease or from ovarian failure because you don't have the estrogen stimulating the lining. Another case where understanding the etiology behind your period problem can impact your full health. If you're overweight and you have PCOS, losing some weight drops that estrogen. You have less fat cells. Suddenly now you are going to ovulate more regularly. Ozempic babies, here we are. We are seeing this phenomenon with semaglutide. People are losing weight. Estrogen's dropping. They're restoring some ovulatory pattern. It's wonderful. So what you can see is in even a very short glimpse that understanding if your period is regular and if it's not, what could be going on is going to be helpful in determining your entire health. And that's really my takeaway, is that it's nobody's job but yours to understand your body. It is your right. It is your responsibility. One of these factors is your reproductive health. Do you ovulate? When do you ovulate? What does that mean? What problems should you look out for? What are the warning signs? What should you do if you do not want to be pregnant? And what should you do if you do? When should you get more help if your periods are irregular or absent? This is your life. This is your body. You deserve to have the information you need to make the choices that are absolutely the best for you. All right, friends, I'm going to answer just a few of your questions here at the end of the episode. This is our For Fertility Sake weekly segment. These questions are asked on Instagram at Natalie Crawford MD every single Monday. Some questions will be answered there on Instagram. Some will be answered here on the weekly podcast and some in the newsletter. You can sign up for that newsletter at nataliecrawfordmd.com/newsletter. Also remember, you can ask questions on the voicemail 657-229-3672. Recording a voicemail episode right after this, and you guys ask the very best questions. So thank you so much for being a part of this community and helping to support me as I support you learning more about your body. All right, how many days post-FET can I take a pregnancy test? As we explained earlier, when you do an embryo transfer, you are approximately at the 2-week, 5-day mark. We typically will not check a pregnancy test until you get close to that 2 weeks post-ovulation, which is generally going to be about 9 to 10 days after that embryo transfer. I would make sure you have a good plan. I don't love patients taking a pregnancy test at home because the blood test is going to be more accurate. So I would rather you wait and take the blood test. But ultimately, make sure you're not taking a test and stopping any medication until you get your blood test results, because in an embryo transfer, that supplementation of progesterone is crucial to that pregnancy. How much does being overweight impact fertility? That's such a good question because it can impact fertility in a lot of ways. One we just explained is ovulation, and that's probably the most common. When you are at a heavier weight, more estrogen is being made, which is blunting the brain's signal to send out FSH. So you have an increase in irregular cycles and anovulation. Subsequently, being overweight causes inflammation, and we know that inflammation is a root cause of issues with egg quality. So we see that there's a correlation there as well. A very interesting study looked at donor eggs. If we take egg quality and age and ovulation out of the picture, people who were recipients of donor eggs who were overweight had lower pregnancy rates than those who were normal weight. In the same breath, being underweight is also bad. So there's definitely a normal zone where it's best for your body, probably at a healthy zone where there's less inflammation, but also your body's not so stressed that it's not sure if it can support a pregnancy. How do I decide to keep doing rounds of letrozole or move on to IUI? Doing letrozole is a medication that drops your body's estrogen levels in the bloodstream. Therefore, the brain can interpret that lower estrogen and send out a stronger signal of FSH. This is very effective for PCOS sometimes. It's not effective for hypothalamic amenorrhea because if the brain is not sending out FSH and it has no estrogen, trying to make lower estrogen, not going to get the job done. In general, we should be using letrozole for anovulation, so you have irregular cycles. Letrozole alone is not a treatment for unexplained infertility, meaning if you ovulate, your tubes are open, sperm is good, you shouldn't be doing letrozole and you need to move on right away. If you have anovulation and you're not getting pregnant, at what point do you graduate to unexplained infertility? Typically, the magic number is somewhere between 3 to 6 cycles, largely depending on money, time, age, how you responded, and a variety of factors. The two treatments for unexplained infertility are ovulation induction with IUI, letrozole plus IUI, Clomid plus IUI, or IVF. This is a great discussion to have with your doctor, your care team. I am a strong believer that you need to know the answer to this before you get started in treatment. That way you don't have this question and you know, what are my next steps? I'm a 32-year-old starting IVF on Thursday, hearing conflicting things about exercise during the cycle. During an IVF cycle, we are giving you FSH. So the shots we give to grow the eggs in an IVF cycle is exactly those hormones the brain makes. But that is going to cause more than one egg to grow at one time. This is going to make the ovaries bigger. What we're really worried about with exercise is something called ovarian torsion. And this is when the ovaries twist upon themselves, cutting off their blood supply. And this can be a surgical emergency and you could lose an ovary. For most people, this is not an issue the first couple days of stem, but if you have a high egg count specifically, the moment you start those shots, you should cut down on exercise. It doesn't mean nothing, but here's how I explain it to patients. Imagine your ovaries are water balloons sitting in your pelvis. They need to stay there. So running, jumping jacks, downward dog and yoga, all of those things move the water balloons, and so they are all out of the picture. I recommend walking, stretching, yoga without any inversions, lifting weights but in a slower pattern, just taking things a little bit easier. We certainly don't want to be a place for torsion. It can be terrible. So really take your doctor's advice, listen to what they're saying. But I'm also a strong, strong believer that exercise is good for your body, your health, your stress management. And I am not one that believes you can't do anything during your cycle. So if your team says that, challenge it. I give you permission. Thank you, friends, for supporting me, the podcast, and asking all of your questions. I appreciate you spending your most valuable commodity, your time, right here with me. Thank you, friends. Thank you all for listening to As a Woman. It would mean so much if you could rate, review, and follow the podcast to be notified of new episodes every Sunday. I hope you learned something new, and I hope you share it with someone in your life. Be sure to follow along on Instagram at NatalieCrawfordMD and check out the YouTube channel NatalieCrawfordMD. If you're interested in becoming a patient, you can also follow Fora Fertility. I'm so thrilled to have you here, part of the community that amplifies others as a woman.
Hey guys, welcome to The Collective. I'm Brianne Helfrich, a 26-year-old bioethics PhD student and clothing brand CEO. Welcome to my podcast where we talk all things health and wellness, navigating your 20s, and becoming the best version of yourself. So sit down, play that episode, and join The Collective.